You remember you talked about the,
he would just be thrilled.
How old is he?
10.
Eventually I'll need the sign-up sheet.
Yeah, they'll bring it to you.
Order. It's Thursday and about, a little bit late, 7 minutes past nine. Committee members present are, we'll start from those. So I have President of Corin, Parnell, Martin, myself, Hanley, Co-Chairman Foster, Terrio, Kelly, and Brown. We're here today to have testimony on the Long Range Planning Commission, which is HCR 1. And for everybody's information, we've announced this before. We have session at 10. Today we're going to take testimony and work till we can. There will be a statewide teleconference tomorrow from 10 o'clock to 1, from 10 in the morning till 1.
Saturday.
Oh, Saturday. I'm sorry. Thank you, Representative Brown. And then on Monday, we will actually take the bill back up in the afternoon to do the committee work and any changes and committee substitutes that we feel we need to make, and we'll hopefully be ready to pass it out on Monday. If not, we will carry it over to Tuesday, but that's kind of the anticipated schedule for this particular resolution. With that, I'd like to invite Speaker Phillips to the table to testify. She is the prime sponsor of this resolution, and I invite you to make some remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for scheduling this bill and hearing it today. The concept of creating a special long-range financial planning commission charged with proposing a plan to organize the state finances was proposed during the last legislative session. Recognizing that state spending has consistently exceeded recurring revenues to the state and that the state is faced with an unpredictable and declining revenue stream, several thoughtful plans for dealing with the state's budget crisis were proposed in the last legislature. Notable among these was the plan to change the process for managing the state's financial accounts developed by Roger Cremo. The Cremo plan was presented to the last legislature under HJR 48 and received extensive consideration by a House Judiciary Subcommittee. As part of the consideration, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Brian Porter convened a subcommittee, which I chaired, to evaluate the underlying premises of the Cremo plan. As we discussed the provisions of the Cremo plan, other plans and ideas were also debated. Central to all discussion was an expressed desire to examine the feasibility of forward funding the budget. With the advent of the oil tax litigation settlements, this could now be a possibility by the year 1997. The subcommittee recommended to Chairman Porter that a long-range financial planning commission be convened to review and identify anticipated state expenditures, recurring revenue and potential revenue sources, existing reserves, and to investigate implementing forward funding of the budget. Long-range financial planning is essential if we are to attain some financial stability for Alaska's future. I believe that creating the Long-Range Financial Planning Commission is a crucial first step in that direction, and I ask for your support of HCR 1. Yesterday morning, several of us met, myself and the finance chairman met with representatives of the governor's office to discuss the provisions of HCR 1. They are generally in agreement, but ask that we consider several changes, which we feel will make it a better commission and make the process better. One, if you will turn to page 3, line 8, or line 9, we had asked that the commission report back to the legislature on February 15, 1996. The governor's office feels that it would be beneficial to the entire state if that date could be changed and modified to October 1st, 1995, and they would use the premise of the commission report in developing their budget for next year. I have absolutely no problem with that and would recommend that change. We also discussed the makeup of the committee, which when we first set up the committee, we looked at it as having financial experts on it. In re-examining that philosophy, I would recommend that it is better to have the majority of people being public members. And then the financial experts we can take from staff people in-house. We don't need to fill each one of those seats with the financial experts that we already have on staff in the state. I have no problem with changing that makeup to show a greater percentage for the public representation on this commission. And then we discussed quite thoroughly yesterday, in order to cut the fiscal note, that we would, in fact, use in-house staff for the majority of the work. I would still recommend that we have a contractor, that we hire a contractor to coordinate the overall commission and all the work of the commission. but that the staff work can be performed in-house, and we will be able to save money on that. The other issue I wanted to bring up is that we reached agreement that we could put an office in the Anchorage LIO for this commission, and they could be located there in a central location. Be glad to answer any questions and anything that any people have any ideas for amendments or changes to the commission or to the resolution. I'd be glad to discuss those.
Representative Foster.
I was wondering. First of all, I wanted to commend you on this. I think it's very thought out, and I think it's a logical approach right now. But just offhand, I was wondering here on your fiscal note, and I just noticed it, for the purposes of estimating travel costs, we're assuming here that some of them are coming from various areas, and then the fact that there are six of them. I was just wondering, that's not in concrete. I mean, you could get somebody from Nome, for example.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And as we debate the different bills, the Senate bill has a much higher fiscal note for travel in order to include more public members from across the state coming in together.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that there's merit to that.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, sir. Madam Chairman, I really have, Madam Speaker, mixed emotions here on this one here, because we've been through the process, and with all the good intentions in the world from past administrations, and it just seems like we're still, when one legislative body comes up with the good ideas, and here's the scenario, and here's the target, then the next group comes in, or the next governors, and I want to present for your preview later the one that Steve Cooper did, and this was the budget summit, and it was a great idea, and each legislators were targeted to go to their community councils and go to the village area, and each of them must have community hearings, and let's bring up from the base these consistent concerns and solutions that people have. Well, here it is, and we've done nothing. And then Representative Brown has been through it too, and we'll bring on a fiscal note first. He spent over $150,000. But the in-depth reports, very detailed report, very good reports, but what have we done? Now, and we brought the same fear of the fiscal gap, and, I'm a little frustrated with this as a way in time. We want to listen to the people. We want to get their ideas, but we don't do nothing. We listen to ourselves, and we get ideas, and we do nothing. I guess probably the most in-depth series of reports is from ISA. And some of these were paid for by private corporations to see the fiscal gap, and we can also get private organizations now, as you intend to have them involved. And of course, all of these come from my own brain trust from the university, but I'm frustrated to say that we've been through the mills, we've done this. I don't know if there's anything new that we might come up with as solutions, because we're not willing to bite the bullet or take the challenge. Like we always talk about taxing. I hate that word so much, I think of something else. But capping anyway is another solution, but we won't do that because of this absolutely super sacred thing called the permanent fund and even the earned interest. We haven't had guts enough at the legislative body saying, hey, perhaps we should use that. Perhaps we should cap. Perhaps we should do other things with the dividend. We're filthy rich. There's no gap. It's just that, do we have the gut to say we can't give $700-800 million away every year and say, gee, we're out of money, folks? So are we going to address those? And what's going to be different from this group than what's been tried before?
Representative Martin, I hope it will be the will of the legislature to make sure that the future finances of the state are taken care of and protected.
Well, then we should do it in-house. You don't need a commission.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Speaker Phillips. And I know this process is working because Representative Martin and I are coming closer to agreement. And I'll second many of the comments he just made. It has been a long process that we've had ever since I've been in the legislature for 8 years. And I think that we should look at what's gone before as necessary groundwork to educate the public about our situation and to help all of us understand what the options are. I realize there are new members to the legislature who haven't been so involved in this conversation over the past years, but I believe that what we need to do now is bring together what we know. And I think this commission could help us do that, help us package a consensus or solutions, options that we could then, rather than go back to the public and say, what do you want to do, and have them tell us we want you to cut the budget, that what we should do is we should package some solutions and take those forward to see which direction people prefer to go in. And I'd like to put out this concept, which I mentioned on the floor the other day and have been discussing it with people, and that is that if we were to focus the work of this year into a conclusion so that we, rather than have all of the discussion take place next year, which will be an election year, and as we all know, or at least those of us who've been here a while know, things get increasingly partisan and there's more posturing and it's more difficult to get anything done and to find that common ground we need to find the closer we get to the election. So if we had a special session later this year, I think it would have a lot of advantages in bringing to a successful conclusion the work that's been going on for a long time. And I believe that the critical elements are that this commission should help us package it, and then we must have active involvement by the legislature and by the executive branch, because we're the ones who ultimately have to vote and make a decision. And that we could have a public process, either led by the commission or led by the legislative slash executive group, over the interim, over the summer, and try to have a successful conclusion in the fall, in this year. And I think with just some minor shifts of kind of focusing what's proposed here, just fitting it into calendar 1995, we'd give ourselves the best chance for success, if success means action. And I'm very anxious that this group not just be another rehash with nothing to come of it. I think we've had a lot of that already, and that it is time for action. And I'd urge us to think about that possibility as we move forward in working on this. And I'd be interested in the speaker's perception of whether that would help increase our chances for success.
Representative Brown and I discussed this last night, and I believe that there is merit in that suggestion and would consider pursuing that.
Thank you. Representative Foster?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, traveling throughout the hinterlands, the more remote areas of the state, I hear more and more people in the villages who are typically fairly passive on what happens here in Juneau, even asking me and demanding, what is our long-range plan? What is our future? What is going to become of them here in the next 10 or 20 years? And I don't know. And, you know, this is the 7th January I've been here. I haven't seen anybody come up with a plan like this. I think it's a real logical thing, and I commend, again, Representative Phillips for sponsoring this. I think the public demanding this. You know, I've gone through all the autobiographies, or the biographies, that Representative Martin has been kind enough to supply us with a manual here every 2 years. And I've been doing this for the last 3 or 4 different legislative sessions. And you know, even the people that are here and that represent the people have been pledging to the people that we do need a long-range plan. And it's been very bipartisan. And I think this is a good thing here that we could see, if we can support it, that it will work if we want it to.
Representative Terrio?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess some of the concerns that I had in just reading over the original language have been addressed. I thought that the public would be real suspicious if it was dominated by elected officials or folks from the governor's office. And if we switch that so that the public membership is larger, I think that helps allay some of that fear. I know down on the resolve that starts on line 22 on page 2, where you list a number of things, nothing in the list is really prioritized, but one thing that jumped out at me was that on number 3, you talk about generating sustainable sources of revenue. Then number 4, you come in with the word tax. It's not until you get to the next page that you talk about program cuts and program consolidation, that type of thing. And although, you know, I am a firm believer, in fact, through the campaign, told people that taxes are out there in our future, I don't think that we can have taxes and not have cuts. You know, even when we have taxes, the level of spending that we have is going to have to be reduced. So I think I would feel a little bit more comfortable, even though it's just a shuffling of the priorities, if we talked about consolidations and maybe reduction and dropping off some services before we got to that. So that's probably an amendment that I would propose.
That These were not prioritized in any manner, and if I were going to prioritize myself right now, I'd take number 8 and make it number 1. So, and whatever you do as far as the prioritization of them is fine.
One other thing that I think we need to consider is what the base information that the group would start with or do their calculations on would be. We have experts in the state agencies that the Department of Revenue's oil forecast. It's probably just as good as anybody's forecast.
That's what we, in discussion yesterday with the governor's office, that's what we discussed.
And I don't know if you want to put some of those in as resolves, that base information should be Department of Revenue's mid-case forecast, plus some of the growth in different departments. Department of Education has charted out growth in education foundation formula. So some of those things, I know we don't probably need to get down to every single little, program that we have and how to turn that into the future, but some of the large ones we might want to specify. Because based on whether you take the mid-case, the low-case, that kind of changes the assumption of the future years.
We do have someone to testify, and I know the speaker has things to do. We're getting a little bit into discussion, which is fine because we don't, and I will ask after Mr. Christensen testifies if there's anyone else who wants to that's in the audience today so we can get that done. We will have the teleconference on Saturday from 10 to 1 as well. So I don't mind going through discussion. I would like to get to Mr. Christensen and anyone else who wants to testify today. And so
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Speaker Phillips. Mr. Christensen? If you could identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Chris Christensen. I'm the General Counsel to the Judicial Branch of Government. And as Mr. Snowden noted, the brains of the organization. I'm still not certain why everyone laughed when he said that the other day. In reviewing this resolution, we noted that the representatives of both the legislative and executive branches are participating in the planning process. The judicial branch will necessarily be part of the equation in any effort to rationalize state spending and to downsize state government, and we would therefore request that one seat on the commission be made available to a representative from the judicial branch.
Any questions? This is the recurring third branch of government theme that we often hear.
Fourth branch.
Does this mean we have to have the university get a seat too?
Representative Martin?
Yeah, Mr. Christian brings up a very interesting point. And here goes back to the executive order. Executive order said very clearly that it is the governor's responsibility, and each one has done it faithfully, to present a long-term plan for the state's financial well-being, and it makes a very clear outline. Now, the governor can invite legislators to that, but never before had they said, and judiciary members. So I was wondering why the judiciary wanted to change now when it has never been done over all the years that each governor has given us a long-range plan through the Executive Budget Act.
Through the chair, Representative Martin, I'm not sure that anyone in the past has ever paid much attention to those plans.
That's my point, sir.
And what we have here is something that I think an idea as time has come, something that people will pay attention to, and we would like to be part of the process.
What would you answer? It's strictly financial. I think the court has to keep itself at distance from the executive group and from the legislature, so when we do something that's dumb, then you can say we weren't part of it. We're protecting the public, and that's your role as the judiciary.
Through the chair, Representative Martin, just looking at the resolution, I note a number of things are listed as duties of the commission, things the commission should look at, which we have some particular expertise in. For example, the commission should review and identify anticipated state expenditures and recurring revenue and potential revenue sources. Well, one source of state revenue are, for example, criminal fines. And as you know, we've been working on the issue of criminal fines because of the day fines bill that the legislature passed last year. Another thing is, if new taxes are recommended, to investigate specific structures and reasons for this. As Mr. Snowden noted the other day, the major thing driving the cost of our criminal justice system is alcohol. And one conceivable way of attempting to reduce alcohol consumption would be a tax in that area. We have expertise in exactly how much alcohol is driving the cost of the criminal justice system. And I guess I could go on, but there are areas that we have expertise in, things that definitely drive the state budget, the whole way our criminal law system is set up, the kinds of things that are crimes, and the way we punish people for them. And we do believe we have some valuable input to offer.
One question, sir, upon it. Then where would the people go to if there is a groundswell of objection to some aspect of the total formula that we, the legislators and governor, formulate? And they feel, for whatever reason, that this is unjustified and so on, they're not going to go to the attorney general. He protects the governor. They're not going to go to the legislature because we did the wisdom. We're endowed with wisdom that they don't have. But we hope that they can go to the court. And then the court said, hey, we were part of the process. We're sorry. We can't advocate your concerns.
That's a good question. I guess the answer is I would not anticipate that judges would be members of would constitute the representative from the judicial branch, but probably a representative, one of the financial experts from our administrative office. Quite frankly, this sort of problem arises all the time. As you know, each year the Supreme Court requests legislators to introduce a number of pieces of legislation. Any one of those pieces of legislation could turn into a lawsuit. There have been many occasions over the years that the Supreme Court has adopted its own court rule and then has thrown its own court rule out as being unconstitutional. So you have to understand that judges do wear two hats. They wear an administrative hat, but they do wear their judicial hat, and they're able to put their administrative interests aside and look at legal issues objectively.
Representative Parnell? I think I'll pass, Mr. Chairman. Representative Martin, adequately express my concern over an inherent conflict of interest. I think the court system, and I'm not saying I think I need to hear more testimony on this, but I too think the court system has something valuable to add, and the third branch of government does. I think that the commission, my hope is that they would be looking to the court system for input if the court system is not granted a seat on the commission. But I too am concerned about an inherent conflict of interest with anything that might have to come out of this, and the court having to rule on a potential long-range plan that comes out of this process. So those are just my concerns, and maybe we can address those further in the hearings as we come to go through this. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify. Is there anyone in the audience? Mr. Ritchie, come on. Forward. Kevin Ritchie.
Hi.
I don't know what your official title is now. You've changed positions, but if you'd identify yourself for the record.
My name is Kevin Ritchie, the Executive Director of the Alaska Municipal League, and I just wanted to say real briefly that the Municipal League very strongly supports the long-range fiscal planning process. In fact, that's half of our municipal platform this year. One is stabilization of municipalities, and the other one is long-range fiscal planning, which is also crucial to the stabilization of municipalities. And we have disseminating information and having a true statewide process is always an issue, and getting people involved is always an issue, and certainly money is one of those factors. The municipalities, which in partnership with the state, you know, obviously provide services to all Alaskans, we obviously have a structure across the state. We have meeting rooms, we have staff, we have people that can assist in this process, and we'd be very proud to assist in the planning process.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the offer, and I'm sure we'll take you up on that, as there are anticipated to be meetings held around the state, and we don't have necessarily state offices in all those places, so that's very much appreciated, the offer, and we'll be in touch with you, I'm sure. Are there any questions for Mr. Ritchie? Thank you very much. Did you have a question?
Well, yes, it's been going on my mind.
Okay. Representative Martin.
One of the things that I think the municipality does that concerns me, and very few people say that the special interests had anything to do with the Constitution of the State of Alaska. And I felt that that's wrong, because the ones that really had a stronger voice than even the citizens and the delegates was the American Association of Municipal Governments. They drew up this model, and they're the ones that put the prohibition in there on referendums and the people's right to control expenditures of the legislature or a political body. And I'm very concerned that you absolutely want to hear from the municipal government, but I hope they don't take the strong stand they did before of prohibiting the people the rights through initiative or the vote on tax structures or things like that. And we absolutely need to change that in the state constitution. People allow to have their voice, as we heard from California in the last few elections, to control the expenditures of local government and as well as state. But at the national policy, the Municipal League absolutely opposes the people interfering with sources of revenue and appropriations. Would that be expressed by your group?
The Alaska Municipal League does not is not against the voice of the people in this area. In fact, we strongly encourage it.
Would you support my constitutional amendment then, sir?
I have become more familiar with that, but we can certainly bring that up as an issue before the league.
Okay, we'll bring it up to you.
He's trying to sneak in other issues into our hearing.
Before he dives through this here, you know, the Municipal League gets the upper hand on the decisions. The people may have no voice, and for what they say, we need a guaranteed source of revenue. And once we do that, the future generations say, hey, those people 10 years ago prohibited you from even protecting your pocketbook.
Well, we haven't suggested that they have a seat. They have offered their services, and I appreciate that. And every special interest group out there, and individuals are special interest groups as well for themselves that will be available to testify, and we would hope that they all come forward and give their input at the time so we can make a rational decision. So any other questions? Thank you very much for testifying today. Is there anyone else in the public that wanted to testify today? I would just like to make a statement as well while the speaker's here for everyone. I agree with Representative Martin and Brown on the concern about doing something different than we've done in the past. I think, as Representative Brown mentioned, the groundwork has been laid. I think it was very important to go through many of the reports, many of the summits. Governor Hickel had things as well. It laid the groundwork for this, and I've emphasized time and time again that we pretty much, I think, have identified the problem. We can debate how large the gap is. We have a difference between our recurring revenue and our anticipated spending, even at current levels. And I think that is largely the problem, is closing the gap. We've also identified most of the tools to closing the gap. There are actually only two. One is to cut spending, the other is to raise revenues. There's lots of options in there, but it's pretty basic as to how you close a gap. It can be one or both or a combination of those. And I would hope that this group takes the next step, which is not spend a lot of time on how much does an income tax raise and debate it, but how do we make the necessary decisions? How do we foresee that the legislature, if we're not responsible enough, if that's a problem, or the executive to go ahead and put those things together in a plan and something that's enforceable, so we take the next step beyond identifying the problem and the parts to filling it and actually put the parts together and figure out a way to implement that and force the legislature or put enough political pressure if that requires a special session or public testimony to make the tough decisions that we have. So those are just my comments, and hoping that they take the next step and, again, not fall into what is the fiscal gap and what are the tools. They need to identify those but go beyond that as well. Any other questions or comments? Representative Coring?
I'd just like to, Mr. Chairman, thank Speaker Phillips for her testimony and also to commend her for taking the initiative to develop and promote this plan. I think it's something that we've needed for a long time. I think it's a major step forward, and it helps us to get a handle on the fiscal crisis that we're facing right now and implement some stability in the process here. I think also that the emphasis should be on reducing the budget in terms of cutting back on spending, and I hope to be a part of that effort, and also to remind us all here that our voters that supported us and put us here, made it very loud and clear that they want us to come down here and do, in fact, get a handle on that budget, and so we need to make those tough decisions, and I think this plan should heavily emphasize that.
Thank you. Just for the record, I'd like to note that Annalee McConnell, the director of OMB, was here. She had to leave, and they are involved in the process and have indicated their willingness to work with the legislature from the governor's office side. And so I just want to let everybody know that they are following the process, have been cooperating, making suggestions, and will continue to do so. If there's no other questions, we'll, recess till 1:30. We have our overview hearings continuing this afternoon, so we'll have four more overviews of the departments, and that will be again at 1:30 this afternoon. So until then, we recess till 1:30.
All right. Your comments and everything, and you should get my staff reviews.
We do have a quorum here. We have Representatives Brown, Foster, myself, Hanley, Mulder, Martin, and Corin, and we are continuing on with our overviews of the different departments. Oh, and Representative Parnell is in the back as well.
Foster?
Yeah, I got Foster. So today we're starting off with the Department of Law and their charts. And Mr. Attorney General, if you'd like to go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity of presenting this overview of the department. I know that most of you are very familiar with the charts. Fortunately, there is one member of your panel who has never seen them before, and looking forward to...
oh, so is he.
I should also say that I can't hear out of my left ear, so if I'm talking too loudly, I need to know that. Conversely, if I'm not speaking loud enough, I'd appreciate that as well. Let me start off by saying that the Department of Law consists of three divisions. Like all other departments, we have an Administrative Services Division. Our primary function, however, that is delivering legal services to and on behalf of the state are accomplished by two divisions, our criminal and our civil divisions. Our criminal division is responsible not only for the prosecution of all crimes in the state other than those being prosecuted by municipalities. We're talking about felonies and misdemeanors throughout the state. That division is also responsible for providing legal services to our departments, primarily of public safety and corrections. They are located in 13 district attorney's offices throughout the state. We have a little, this will be a new one for you. These are indicated by the red that you see. It's important to note, however, that because of actions taken by this body, you have courts conducting business and therefore district attorney outposts that are itinerant for us in every location identified by a yellow pin. This has a lot of implications for us in managing our staff, our caseload, and making sure that we have minimally adequate resources, the secretarial or just the availability of a fax machine and word processing in each of these communities. And it has not an insignificant impact on our budget. Let me identify for you just very briefly what some of the major policy concerns are in the criminal division. In terms of budgeting generally, as we look at the trends, in the last five fiscal years, the criminal division has grown by 7%, from 70 attorneys to 75 attorneys. In that same period of time, we've seen serious misdemeanors increase by 60%. And in that same time period, we've seen violent felonies increase by 30%. We've been able to make do for and to accommodate that kind of caseload largely because of our ability to use word processing. Unfortunately, one of the major policy issues we're confronted in terms of a budget long term is that our system is antiquated, and at least in the last 3 months, we've been seeing one computer workstation go down each week. And that'll be a matter discussed at some later point when we're talking the specifics of our budget in another meeting. Another area where we've seen a specific problem is our ability to deal with white-collar crime. Because of our need to maintain a vacancy factor, we've left one of the two white-collar crime positions unfilled. The consequence of that has been our inability to keep up with the caseload that is being presented by public safety. At the same time, we're not able, because of the increase in our other areas, simply to divert lawyers from mainline DA's offices or other resources in our Office of Special Prosecution and Appeals to deal with those cases. And it is a matter of concern. Obviously, once again, as we look long-term for the budget, it means that we, just as every other department in state government, are going to be faced with having to make some tough choices in deciding which cases get prosecuted and to what extent. And we recognize that we will play a role and have to make our own contribution to downsizing government. Let me turn briefly to the civil division. The civil division is responsible for the legal services primarily to the executive branch, but we all also provide periodic legal services to the legislature and to the judicial branch. We do that function primarily through 13 different sections. most of which are located either in Anchorage, Juneau, or Fairbanks, are the bulk of our civil division, indeed in our criminal division as well, is headquartered in Anchorage in these various sections. You see a multicolored chart here, to be somewhat familiar to most of you. Just reiterate that where you see blue, you're talking about general fund attorneys who are part of our basic budget. The remainder reflect either RSAs or special funding sources. As an example, the orange here reflecting an oil spill. We're talking about the our environmental law section headquartered in Anchorage. Our pink here reflects your appropriation for oil and gas as two examples. The sections run the gamut of activities of state government. I'll just briefly highlight for you the names of those sections. I think it'll add where they correspond. And then I'd like to talk once again about some of the issues that arise in terms of policy you should be aware of that we as a department are facing. We have the commercial section, which relates primarily to the departments of Commerce and Economic Development and Department of Revenue, the Human Services, which provides legal services for departments of Education, Health and Social Services, and Labor, our Natural Resources section, which is primarily geared towards the Department of Natural Resources, DEC, and Fish and Game. Our Oil, Gas, and Mining, obviously, a specialized area, but once again provides legal services to not only the Department of Natural Resources and Revenue, but would be responsible as well for the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, which is now located in the Department of Administration. Our Transportation section, which provides legal services primarily to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, but which has also provided legal services to the Department of Education to the extent that we've talked about school construction projects where the state has been involved. Our Fair Business Practices section is probably the only section in our department that, well, I should say in the division, that relates directly to the public. It is a combination of our consumer protection function, our antitrust section, which is really a specialized form of consumer protection, and also the legal services we provide to the Public Utilities Commission. Our Governmental Affairs section is responsible for dealing with core issues of state government, separation of powers issues. They do provide direct legal advice to the governor, lieutenant governor, the Department of Administration, and the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. Our environmental section is a combination. In Anchorage, it deals with environmental conservation, the Trustees Council, is the section that has been responsible for the wind down of the oil spill litigation. We have a new section which we created this last year called Collections and Support. And while we've had a collection section focusing primarily on the collection of fines, the day fine program that you undertook last year, we have also expanded that section dramatically so that it would also focus on the collection of child support enforcement payments with the Child Support Enforcement Division. Formerly, that function was done by our Human Services section. We believe that it would be more efficient if we consolidated the expertise in part to eliminate what has been a major problem before, at least or largely eliminate the kind of backlog that has jeopardized further federal funding to the state because of our historic only adequate or less than adequate performance on child support enforcement. Our special litigation section, or our tort section, is one that is aimed at defending the state against claims for actions by the state, whether it is a grader that tears out a piece of private property or a person injured by some action of the state. Our welfare fraud and our Medicaid provider fraud units, they must, by federal law, be kept separately, are aimed respectively at those persons who are abusing the system by applying falsely for AFDC and other state support, or on in the Medicaid provider fraud, those who are providers of services who may misbill. And finally, we have our legislation and regulation section, and that section is responsible for both reviewing the all regulations submitted by the executive branch before they may be filed with the lieutenant governor, and secondly, coordinating the drafting of legislation on behalf of the governor primarily, though we will also assist legislators on a case-by-case basis, and providing the appropriate bill reviews at the end of the session. Having summarized those general activities, let me talk to you again about some of the policy issues that I see arising in the civil division. The first that is worth referencing, and it really plays in both the civil and criminal divisions, is just the dramatic rise in juvenile delinquency cases over the last several fiscal years, not only in terms of the numbers of those cases, but also the severity of the crimes that have been covered. As I know that you're aware, most juvenile delinquency cases are currently handled as a civil matter and not in the criminal division, though, again, last session, this legislature expanded the juvenile waiver to waive juveniles committing a variety of crimes into the Superior Court or adult court. In 1992, we had 333 felony referrals. In 1994, 2 years later, that number jumped to 702 felony referrals. And again, I think it shows the frightening aspect of this is that there is a trend that is emerging. It's not one that, in the broad sense, is one we should be happy about. It also has very specific implications, not only for our department, but others, in how we combat that rise. A second policy area where we have concern above and beyond the day-to-day activities that we engage in have been in the employment and labor relations issues. The state has seen a fairly dramatic increase in the number of wrongful discharge cases that have been brought. We've also seen a dramatic increase in the number of grievances that have been brought and are being taken to step four arbitration. I think it is fair to say that to the extent the state government continues to downsize, we can also anticipate that there will be more and more employees exercising their rights to contest actions of the state government in laying them off or discharging them in any sense. A third area, not unrelated to juvenile delinquency, has been the dramatic increase in our, what we call our China cases, our child in need of aid cases, child protective services, where at this point our average caseload is about 200 per attorney. And this is at least 50 over what would be considered the norm. So we're concerned about that particular growth. And again, this is also a reflection of activities that are happening in other parts of state government. We are not a department that primarily generates its own business. We are one that is charged with carrying out, however, defending or carrying out decisions made by others. Two other areas to mention. We continue our efforts in federal litigation. I know that one piece was a matter of some debate today. Mm-hmm. But it is perhaps only a small part of the larger effort which we are continuing on behalf of the state and on behalf of the governor. And we are still at the early end of the tunnel, as it were, in terms of that litigation. Most of them will involve a great deal of time. Some of them are not necessarily going to be achieved only by litigation. Setting aside the whole subsistence issue, another good example are the parallel efforts in terms of RS-2477, where the state is involved in both litigation, but also attempting to work with the Secretary of Interior in changing his direction with regard to federal administrative regulations that would significantly restrict the state's ability to exercise its right-of-way rights. I would also highlight one other area that I see as a burgeoning area of law facing the state as a whole, and that is with regard to native sovereignty. I think that it's fair to say that not a week goes by where there is some form of confrontation by state officials with the issue. It may arise in the context of children's protective issue. It could arise in the form of taxation of a government project, which is currently in litigation in Venati, in the federal courts. Activities or actions by the federal government to extend certain kinds of grants that are traditionally grants run by the state to a village or tribal entity. And again, our department recognizes that one way or another, the state is going to be having to deal with this issue much more directly, hopefully not in a confrontational manner, but that as one looks at the crystal ball, one would say that this is going to be an area that is going to require a great deal of resources, not the least of which is from the Department of Law and its legal resources. Let me switch to one other area that is really a composite of a lot of issues, and that deals with oil and gas matters. I think it's been pleasing to note that we've been able to settle most of the big back tax cases, and for the most part, our tax cases are no longer decades old, and in many respects, we are fairly close to the 1990s. But we're not through the thicket yet. We still have a couple major cases that are going in that regard. And we have numerous cases of, again, not the multi-hundreds of millions of dollars, but smaller disputes that we are working through. We hope that they'll be worked through more quickly. But it continues to be a focus of our department. We also have ongoing royalty disputes, and beginning in April, should we be unable to reach settlement, we will have the third phase of the Amarada Hess case dealing with gas values, and that trial will be taking place here in Juneau. At stake are claims from the state of approximately $300 million. Good news and bad news. The good news is, again, I think we're finally catching up. The bad news, perhaps, is that government fiscal policies are not going to be able to be helped out much by any major windfalls. There are only a very few left. They're not going to be the magnitude of the BP settlement, and therefore, in terms of fiscal planning, that will not be a major solution. One thing that's bringing these cases to resolution has allowed us to do, and you'll see more of it in the next 2 years, is we are beginning to consolidate more and more of the oil and gas functions in-house, and we'll not be seeing the dramatic kinds of billings to outside counsel and outside experts because of our, number one, the size of the cases diminishing and our in-house capacity increasing. Mr. Chairman, those are, I think, the brief comments that I wish to make in terms of overview, and I am certainly prepared to answer any questions that you may have. To the extent that I can't answer them, my able staff will come to my rescue, I'm sure.
I don't know if you want to introduce some of your staff before
I'd be delighted to do that.
Before we get started, we do have questions, but
maybe
we can take the board down so we can... There's a couple of them.
That was actually good.
Hey!
Exposed. Let me first introduce Ms. Barbara Ritchie, who is the Deputy Attorney General for the Civil Division. Ms. Lori Otto, who is the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division. And Mr. Dick McGee, the Director of Administrative Services. I suspect we have others in the room, but with that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I just know for the record that Representatives Kelly and Terrio on the committee are here, as well as Mr. Ogan, Representative McLean. If you'd like to join us, you're welcome to up front. And why don't we start? We had Representative Mulder, Martin, and Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for coming today, Mr. Attorney General. Bruce, what are the number of back royalty cases or disputes that remain?
Back royalty, there are really only two, and it's hard to describe them as back.
Right.
One of them is back, and that is the Amarada Hess case. this phase really is largely focused on the period 1986 forward. We have a separate major royalty dispute involving Point McIntyre. There are smaller disputes. I can't recall how many, but they're not of the $100 million quality.
Right. So your reflection earlier that the magnitude was about $300 million, you felt?
Yes, in the Amirata Hess case going forward.
Right. In the past, I believe, if memory serves me correct, it's been the practice of the Finance Committee and the Legislature to short fund Department of Law in relation to the disputes so that you'd come back again and basically reflect to the Legislature the progress, and hopefully at one point in time or another we were going to settle these things. And so I guess my question goes along the line of how far along are we, and do we need to fund to the levels that we have in the past, the levels for this coming, the upcoming 6 months, and then for the future year?
I think it is crucial that there be the funding we've requested for the next 6 months. The period immediately before trial and into trial are really the most intense periods. We have basically, we will have by the end of this month, expended our appropriation, as has been the case in the last several years. It puts a particular additional stress on outside counsel when we're unable to timely pay. And in that respect, I guess my pitch would be that it's very important that that be funded expeditiously. I also believe that we're going to see that activity carry on because of the one major tax case, a dramatic one, that is scheduled to go in 1996. And we are truly handicapped, and we're always trying to, moderate expenditures, not because of trial considerations in terms of discovery or the like, but because we're always worried about running out of money too soon. And I would encourage the legislature to look seriously at giving a full year funding. My belief is that after fiscal year 1996, you're going to see a dramatic decline in expenditures. And by dramatic, I'm talking in the range of $15 million. That is my hope. That is my expectation.
Okay, that was really the focus of, you know, what kind of expectations do we have as a legislature, and what kind of numbers are...
We're looking, I think, this and next fiscal year, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but we've been expending at about $36 million, and that's a curve that we'll see some decline this next fiscal year, and after that, again, I see a major drop. I guess we will have taken care of the big issues.
That should have been your good news to begin with.
Well, you know, I have to hold the punchline for a while.
Okay. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought we had the good news when you introduced your budget with Governor Hickel. It shows that the good news is the 100% deduction for this fiscal year. But maybe that's been... It brings me up to the other question. The budget that you presented for fiscal year 96 under the Hickel administration, is that going to differ significantly under the Knowles administration?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it does. I don't recall the exact numbers because I can't recall whether it had taken into account the traditional pattern of half-year funding. But there are some slight increases in a couple years, slight meaning $2 or $3 million, as I recall, just because of updated developments. But as you will recall, Mr. Chairman, I think each year where we've submitted, even under the Hickel administration, a particular budget, we've come in with revised numbers that have generally been in excess of what had been initially anticipated because of litigation.
The reason why I asked that is because you talked about earlier the policies and different trends in your policies, and I think that your budget also tells us policy shifts and changes and things like that. And so I guess we'll have to wait for the good news. It said here zeroed out, $15 million. We'll have to wait for 97 on that one. The next one is that I know it's a major policy change from litigation to compliance, and whereas we never had a compliance component before, now, is that going to be your responsibility at $1.9 million, or is that not DEC's responsibilities?
Mr. Chairman, DEC works much as, if I can use the analogy of a police department, which will refer to a prosecutor for cases that need to be brought. we, on the civil side, would probably use that analogy to describe our relationship with DEC.
Are we done, sir, with mental health outside of the supplemental you need? It's my understanding that we should not need any more mental health money.
Mr. Chairman, there will be some residual legal services required to see the implementation, but you will not be, Mr. Chairman, funding those who are appealing the case to the state Supreme Court, as an example. Most of the work should shift really to the trust authority, and with respect to the trust authority itself, as you will recall, last year, it will retain independent counsel. It does not mean that we're not going to be providing some legal services to state agencies that are dealing with the trust authority.
Last
question. I think that is, again, something that will wind down.
Mr. Chairman, last question I have. I noticed in the other fund categories, and I'm particularly concerned about this, that state agencies probably really needing two general fund monies for whatever purpose, and then feeling that, well, we're going to balance our budget by decreasing these program receipts, which we may be able to get later under legislative budget and audit. And I noticed that in your particular case that the other funds have been decreased by 45%, which is nice. But do you intend to come back to labor, the legislative budget and audit to pick that up?
I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite familiar with what Mr. Representative Martin specifically referring to, but if I might defer to Administrative Services Director who might help me out here.
Chairman, Representative Martin, the program receipts we get are the amount that we use to pay the costs of our collections unit.
Right.
We keep enough to pay for the cost of the unit. That's the only place where we receive and use program receipts.
What about other funds? Why is that such a decrease? Well, we can answer it later. I know Mr. Parnell.
These are net effects, and it has to do with the beginning of the decreases in oil and gas litigation next year.
Thank you. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to come back to the first issue you mentioned about the increase in juvenile delinquencies. Are these felony referrals that you referred to people that are being recommended for a waiver to be tried as adults, or where do they fit within the system? And I'd be interested in knowing how many resources, how many lawyers we're now devoting to the within the civil system, what their role is, and are you suggesting by your comments that more attention or resources are needed to deal with juvenile delinquents, or I'm really not clear on what role the Department of Law plays in dealing with those young people.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would be helpful to have both Ms. Ritchie and Ms. Otto comment, and the reason I suggest that is that this is one of the areas where both divisions have a significant role to play. That is to say, traditionally, our human services attorneys, located actually in five different spots in the state, have been responsible for bringing all juvenile cases in juvenile court. Nevertheless, we've seen, as I mentioned earlier, this dramatic increase in felony crimes, many of which are referred now to the Criminal Division for prosecution. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd ask both Ms. Otto and
Ms.
Okay.
And if we could have them identify themselves to the record, and also just try and be brief. We're raising the issues for you now. We have three other departments to go through as well.
Sure,
this is just
Chair.
An overview, and if you could just be aware that these are concerns that will come up at the subcommittee level, and if we can get information as well, but if we can have a brief answer. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Lori Otto. Representative Brown, the numbers that the Attorney General was referring to are juvenile delinquency cases that are handled by DFYS and the Civil Division only. The cases that are covered under the juvenile waiver law are reflected in the statistics for the Criminal Division as felony cases, although there has not been a significant number of cases that we've taken under the new law. So in terms of the numbers, that's what's going on. The felony caseload increases just in general reflective of the overall increase in juvenile delinquency referrals. I think there's been a 42% increase in Anchorage since 1992. But I think Ms. Ritchie should talk about staffing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brown, the staffing of that office in particular is the Anchorage office. There's 7 lawyers, and they cover Anchorage, Palmer, Glen Ellen, Kenai, Bethel, the Ocean Chain, Sandpoint, Valdez, and Cordova.
We have additional lawyers that are doing children's proceedings here in Juneau. 2 are devoted full-time to that. We have 1 attorney full-time in Ketchikan, and the recollection is also in Nome.
I could add one more thing. Sure. The one, I think, relevant fact is in Anchorage, where we are seeing the large numbers of increases. There's really only one lawyer that's doing delinquency cases, and she's completely swamped. It's been such a fast increase that the office really has been taken unawares.
I should add Fairbanks as well. You know, we have a section, and we have a lawyer working part-time in our office.
Thank you. Do we have any other areas that people would like to raise at this time, just for comments? If not, we will thank you very much, and we will be getting back to you. Representative Parnell will chair the subcommittee as well again this year. So, thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Next, we have the Department of Transportation and Mr. Perkins. You're welcome to have anyone sit with you at the table. If we need to pull a chair up, we can do that. And welcome to House Finance, and congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, thank you for giving me this opportunity to make this overview. As everyone here knows, I've been on the job a rather short time, so I'm going to bring a little help with me. Ron Land is here, who is my Director of Administrative Services, and Mr. Gary Hayden, who is the Director of the Marine Highway System. I didn't really bring a chart, but for our basic organization, we are broken down, as you are probably aware, into 3 major regions, each headed up by a regional director in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and in Juneau. And the other major operational portion of the department is the Alaska Marine Highway System, which is headquartered here in Juneau. So we really have 4 major operational branches, and then the commissioner's office and associated staff here in Juneau. I think everyone has a copy of my package here, and I'd like to sort of work my way through the package we gave you. I've briefly listed what our responsibilities are in the DOT. There are certainly some other smaller ones, but basically it's to maintain the state highway system, the Alaska Marine Highway System, operate and maintain the public facilities that we occupy and those that are occupied by us and others. We do run Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airports, and we maintain and operate airports statewide, with the exception of about 4 or 5 of them, which I have listed. To give you a general idea of our capital program, projects program, we have this year somewhere around $445 million, which includes the matching funds in the federal highway system, which is a major amount of money coming into the state each year from the federal government. We have some $70 million, including matching funds, in the federal aviation program, and then in building and harbors, we get intermittent funding from such people as the Corps of Engineers or various others. The current employment for the department is approximately 2,750 people as of now. Goes up a couple of hundred in the summers as we bring on seasonals to help us with our highway construction program and other construction programs. I'd like to go over to this little pie chart we've given you. This is basically a breakdown of fairly large pieces of where our money, where it is. And you'll notice that about 59% of our program is capital projects, with the far majority, or the big majority of that being from the matching funds that are matching the federal programs. About 15.3% or $90 million in operation and maintenance, international airports at about 6.5 or 4%. We do operate the state equipment fleet, a smaller operation, but still a $22 million operation. And the marine highway system, which is some 12 or so percent of our budget. And this gives you a little bit of an idea of where our money goes, with the vast proportion in the capital project side. The next chart I have is just sort of a historical overview of the funds appropriated for maintenance and operation, which I think is a critical area in the state and something we need to look very closely at. But it's a historical chart showing the money that has been appropriated for maintenance of the marine highways and for admin planning and design and so on. You can see that we've held fairly constant here recently. You'll also note that marine highway shows a little drop in it, and that's due to the legislation that reduced the general fund authorization. But this just gives you an idea of where it's headed in the past. The next chart, which I just give you for information purposes, if you take the actual money that we have been authorized and apply it from 83 to 95, you can see that we've stayed fairly level. Now, if you take the inflation, consider an Anchorage CPI, and we've drawn that little line in at the top, and you can see that we have stayed basically the same with our funding levels for M&O, for the highways, and aviation. Stayed pretty well the same, but we haven't even kept up with inflation. Now, the one thing that is not even included on this chart is we have not included any new projects. Otherwise, if a project was built in 87, we don't have that additional maintenance on there. So the numbers are a little, should not really be used as hard numbers. It just gives you the trend that, and what I'm really trying to show here is we really haven't kept up with inflation. The next chart is the same chart, but we did this for facilities. Again, you can see that our appropriations have been fairly constant over the years. And again, inflation has gone up. And again, this does not count new buildings that's come online during that period. I think one thing that people look at is our number of people in the department. It goes up and down. And I thought you might like to see a chart of our total personnel over the last 8 or 9 years, and this gives you an idea of how we go up in the summer when our programs are big, and down in the winter. And this is this completes the overview of the department that I had. And Mr. Chairman, I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Boston.
I wanted to welcome on board, sir. For the benefit of the committee, I've had a real nice chat with the new commissioner. He's a Vietnam veteran, retired Army officer, Corps of Engineer, professional in this line of field. You know, going back to the capital dollars, like under Ice-T, typically it's always been the cheapest source of capital dollars in the state. It's only like 5% matching. And I know there in the late 80s, we were getting about $160 million a year in Ice-T monies at a 5% match. And then about 2 years ago, it jumped to $225 million. But you know, the monies are somehow divided amongst the western states, and I believe they've got some kind of a border council on it. I know for this year alone, the eastern part of the state of Washington received $5.7 billion in ICE-T monies, about 30 or 40 times more than we got up here, but it's all population divvied up. But, you know, is there any way that we can get an Alaskan onto this board, or maybe your staff can check and see as far as the capital dollars coming into the state, you know, as to whether or not they're going to increase or anything. We don't have any Alaskans on that board for sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to sort of let Ron take care of this one, as I'm not totally up on exactly how this is done. I will mention one thing, though. One thing that will be a very definite priority of mine within the next 2 years is Ice-T is up for reauthorization. And I think we need to pay, and I know I am going to pay, particular attention to other states, because we're in a competition on this thing, as to what they're thinking and where they're coming from long before this legislation gets written, because we need to keep at least what we got. We need to try to do a little better, but I am very concerned in this day of the money cutting in Washington, D.C., and our competition with what I would call underfunded states. Our proportion of this, for instance, is a lot more than California. So I am very concerned that we're going to have a pretty good run at our money from other states. And in this regard, one thing that I am going to make a very high priority that I personally stay involved with the other state highway commissioners or transportation commissioners, whichever they have, so that I can get some information, hopefully up front, as to where these other people are coming from and what they're thinking. And with that, I'd like for Ron to go ahead and address it.